Nation, only on 930 WFMD.
It's the Morning News Express on WFMD, 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. Well, you might have heard in the news, you might have heard in a commercial or two, that this is the month of purple. And in the studio, Jonathan Schweitzer is with us. Pastor Schweitzer is in the studio. Well, you know, you earned it. You got the degree, right? You went to school. You got the degree. You got the paper hanging up somewhere.
Call me whatever you want.
Or did you just go to like one of those internet places and get it online?
You can do that more and more these days. Yeah, apparently, right. You can go to Liberty University, but nobody wants to anymore.
Liberty University, a beautiful school.
It is. It's without a
beautiful school. Costs a lot of money. Tell me a little bit about, first of all, you know, how we got it, and what is this the purple. What are we doing
so
here?
So September is the National Recovery Awareness Month, and the idea behind Frederick County Goes Purple, it's something that started in a couple counties on the eastern side of Maryland, is that you take the entire month to go purple, to dress purple, to decorate in purple, put up purple light bulbs, so that we could show all of those that struggle with addiction, that are in recovery, and their families, that we are a community that cares for those that are in those places and that stands with them and that has significant resources available here in Frederick for that. And so last year, every single one of the middle schools and high schools got on board doing Purple Fridays. We gave out 2,500 T-shirts to all the teachers so that they could, you know, dress and find ways to weave purple lessons into about opioids and addiction into their instruction. All of the municipalities, the county executive and all the municipalities across Frederick went purple. And about 100-some businesses as well got on board. A bunch of churches.
Is this a national thing, or is this a – and how did you get involved with it, and how did you get so many people involved with it, and where did some of your funding come from? Because I know you are a pastor, so you're not making a whole lot of money.
We always need more funding, right?
Always.
Any nonprofit that you are is that way. But purple is associated with National Recovery Month. So that was already the case. And so the idea is always, how do you draw awareness to something? 70,000 people in 2018 across the nation died to opioid overdose, right? And, you know, there's the lies of the pharmaceutical companies. There's a heroin outbreak. There's the rise of the internet and the demand for pain-free medicine, you know, the Patient Bill of Rights. There was all of the Rust Belt parts of the nation, because we outsourced all of our jobs across the world. And in the middle of the Ohio River Valley, there's this metastasizing of all of these people that suddenly were dying from heroin and opioid overdose. And then, of course, in the last couple of years, fentanyl came on the scene and just created this you know, Russian roulette that any time that you take any drugs anywhere, there's the potential that that's going to be the last one, because it's it's just so powerful. And so all of that going on at the same time created this environment where we had, for the last 4 years, more than one a week dying in Frederick County, our sons and daughters, right here in Frederick County, to opioid overdose. And, you know, we have Sean Nicholson with us this morning, David Brooks. Sean's with the Phoenix Foundation and works with a number of sober houses here in Frederick. David Brooks has been on the ground floor of counseling those that are homeless, those that are, you know, at the point of the facing the most difficult struggles with addiction. And both of these guys are way more important to this process than I am.
Yeah, and we're going to get into talking to those guys coming up in just a moment. We got to take a break. And if you want to, I think it's being streamed live, right, on David Brooks. Oh, my goodness, great. As long as I'm not in it, that's all that counts. The Cadillac Counselor? Yeah, we'll talk more with David. We'll talk more with Sean coming up on the Morning News Express.
News Center is 930 WFMD.
I never meant to call you when you're sorrow.
820 at WFMD. It's the Morning News Express. 301-694-9363. In this studio, we've got Pastor Jonathan Schweitzer, Sean Nicholson, and David Brooks. Let me introduce, where do you want to start with, Jonathan? You want to start with Sean? Sean, tell us a little bit about the Phoenix Project.
So my name is Sean Nicholson. I'm a person in recovery. Next month, I'll celebrate 5 years clean and sober from any mind-altering substances or chemicals. I'm also the director of development for the Phoenix Foundation that has recently opened the Phoenix Recovery Academy, which is Maryland's only recovery high school. It's a very small niche, personable school, small student-to-teacher ratio. Historically, recovery high schools are about 30 to 50 kids on average. This is a statistically proven model that is all across the country, roughly 56 schools in the nation. SAMHSA funded some grant studies a couple years ago on outcomes of recovery high schools and determined that they're very effective. Students who graduate from recovery high schools are five times more likely to stay sober 1 year after graduation and four times less likely to be on parole or probation, which is a huge number.
So that school's in Frederick?
Yes. We just opened on August 31st. We have a couple students enrolled now. We have three teachers on staff, a head of school.
Now, this is no funding from Frederick County Public Schools or anything, is there?
This is a separate nonprofit entity.
Okay.
So we are a accredited non-public school, which in Maryland, that's what they call it. It's a private school.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tuition-based fund, but we've done an extremely good job of putting together a scholarship fund so that no kid will be turned down based upon a financial reason.
That's and are we talking just high school kids, middle school kids, or?
So 9th through 12th, okay. High school, recovery high school, yeah. I mean, 9 out of 10 people who suffer from substance use disorder started when they were in their adolescence. And so, including myself, at 14 years old, going to West Frederick Middle School and having an issue with drugs and alcohol, my family didn't understand or know what to do with me. So my father paid to put me in military school for a year and a half at $15,000 a year. And I learned how to shine shoes. And I didn't learn about my disease or why I made the decisions or the consequences that would come from those decisions. And so
He thought he could just scare you straight, so to speak.
Yeah, well, he didn't have the education necessary to deal with what I was going through. So part of our program is a parental aspect that will educate and help the parents understand what the needs of their child are at such an early age because they're doing, alcohol or drugs. One in seven adolescents are in need of substance use treatment. We are all here in a collective effort to try to make a difference on all of our different levels of how we do that. I'm a huge advocate on the back end for programs and resources and treatment, sober living, things of that nature. But I also understand that as much money that we're throwing at an issue to band-aid a problem and maintain it is that if we're going to change it, we have to get in front of it. And that starts with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so until we understand that and we start focusing our energy and our efforts into that, we're not going to see the changes that we all hope and pray and want for. The other, really attractive thing to a person like me is that when I was able to take hold of trying to get sober, there was an entire community of people, including, David Brooks was my counselor at the jail at Marcy's Choice in 2014 when I went back to jail and got sober, been sober ever since. And so these people helped me get there. These people helped me get there, and there was a whole community surrounding me that was willing to get me through it. But for kids, there isn't that. There is no platform or avenue or place that they can channel what they need to recover. And if we can get some kids sober at 15, 16, 17 years old, what kind of difference could we make? And I've helped all my friends get sober. If they're not in prison still, I've made an effort to try to help them. What happens if kids start helping their friends get sober? I mean, what kind of difference can we really make in the community?
Yeah, let's. You mentioned David Brooks. Let's talk to David here for just a minute. And you are a licensed counselor. Your list of things of accomplishments are large. But when I first met you, you were working for the state in the prison system. Tell me a little bit about yourself, sir.
So, I'm David Brooks, a.k.a. the Cadillac Counselor.
The Cadillac Counselor.
The Cadillac Counselor, But I've been in the Frederick area since about 2007, and I've been working in the substance use disorder field. Before that, I did a lot of mental health. mental retardation, autism. That was mainly my focus within the children in schools. But since I've been in Frederick, I've been mainly looking at mental health and substance use as my main focus, especially within Frederick County. And just like Sean said, he came through the program at that time. That's whenever I was shifting it from a therapeutic substance abuse model to a criminogenic model. And so for me, I've seen the essence of recovery really enhanced due to looking at the criminal aspect of drug use. Because a lot of times people forget that, yes, it's still a crime. Like, you can't, I mean, just because you have an addiction, and we know that the dependency, tolerance, all of the medical side of it is still there, but it's still a crime every time you go and you drink and you drive and you pick up drugs and you sell them or trade them, whatever it is, it's illegal. And so for me, I look at my program focuses on that. Now, do we just deal with criminal behavior? No, we deal with, at Brooks Behavioral Health Services, we deal with everything. If you come in there and you have a problem, we will definitely figure it out. And especially with Frederick Goes Purple, I'm a big advocate of that. Because I believe that we need to bring awareness. The problem is, for me and my business and what I do, September is just a month. I'm doing this, especially like Sean and Pastor. We do this 24/7. Like, you, when you get involved in this, it's engulfing, mm-hmm. because the need is so large. And like Sean was saying, we got to get in front of it. We have to become proactive. The children, I see 12, 13, 14-year-olds all the time starting to use marijuana or drink a little bit. But whenever our coping skills can't deal with it, then we start seeing that marijuana go to cocaine, go to crack, go to heroin, go to pills. And it keeps on going because the pain of life is, you can't outnumb it. And so that's what we do, is we try to get out in front and teach people how to handle and cope with life.
All right, we'll have more. If you've got a question for any one of these three gentlemen, you can pick up the phone, 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. You can also text message us at that same number, 301-694-WFMD. More coming up on the Morning News Express.
I'm Steve Schmidt, President.
The only clear choice for this year's election, the Morning Mayor, Bob Miller, on 930 WFMD.
It's the Morning News Express, 835 at WFMD, and Frederick Goes Purple. And why that is happening? Well, in the studio, we have Jonathan Schweitzer, David Brooks, and Sean Nicholson, who have all put their efforts towards going purple and what that means about addiction in not only Frederick County, but the state of Maryland, the whole country. It just seems like it's just... it's just overwhelming, and I guarantee you that everybody knows somebody who is, you know, a former addict of some sort, whether they're, you know, drinking drugs or whatever. I mean, you guys were focusing on drugs and alcohol because those are things that can really do harm to you and to your friends and family. But that's, you know, addiction's addiction. It was funny. I watched this thing, and I want to give you guys more time. But, of course, I saw this show on Netflix called Drugs, Inc. I don't know if anybody's ever seen it. And they showed a guy in Baltimore. And it was funny because I look at these guys who talk about how much money they make, yet they live in hovels, and they don't drive nice cars. They don't have nice things, it doesn't look like, but they have money. And the thing that really bothered me was they showed these two, I don't know, they couldn't have been, they were under 10-year-old black children, boys playing basketball out in the streets. And he said, see those two kids out there? He goes, they're both mine. He goes, I either will have them both users. One will be a user. One will be one of my employees. He goes, but I got them. And I just talked to him, and he said, and I'm probably going to go to hell about this. He goes, but I don't care. And I'm thinking to myself, you want to ruin the lives of little children because of your greed. And that just really bothers me. And that's one of the things I hate about, they say, if you're, being a Christian, you're not supposed to hate anybody. But I hate drug dealers that will hook little kids on drugs and heroin and cocaine and stuff. I just those people, I just have nothing for them.
You know, to be honest, that's how it's starting to get. Like, it's starting to get to the point where when you start selling drugs, I mean, don't get me wrong. When I sold drugs, I had morals. I just did. Like, I didn't mess with, but I didn't really, I wasn't on the bottom level. You know what I mean? Like, it was weight, pretty much what I was dealing with. But I watched that kind of stuff, and that's what turned my stomach, because you would see people that were on their very dollar, their very bottom dollar, and somebody was swindling for. Mm-hmm. You see kids running around not going to school and just kind of just that lifestyle. I've seen, and especially in New Orleans, like, you look at people who have been on housing for their whole life. Their grandmother was on housing. Their children are going to be on housing. And that was just crazy. And it's the same thing in Baltimore. Baltimore, it's a belief system that was created that's where they live. And they live out of that belief system. Those children, they are going to grow up under that belief system. And it just keeps on going. And
well, how do we stop that? Job opportunities and the opportunities for them to see that there's another way out.
But a lot of those times when they get that job, they still come in with that same belief system. Mm-hmm. So they come in late, they're dragged, and they don't really put a lot of effort. That's why I said a lot of times you have to change that mindset. You have to get sober. And then you have to really step away from that lifestyle, because until you step away from it, you're still engulfed in it, you know, because the drugs still have value. You still think it connects as a catalyst to money. And so when you have those type of mindsets, you just love money and you just love doing drugs and being around drugs. And so for me, going to get that job, you'll end up losing it. You have to learn how to cherish that job. You have to learn how to love yourself, because if you don't love yourself, you have no love for anyone else around you. So that's what I see. When I see an issue like that, I see a community that doesn't love themselves. But there are people, don't get me wrong, you look at those same neighborhoods, there are people who love themselves that are trying to clean it up, but the majority rules. And that's what, and especially in Baltimore, the majority, man, drugs are just... I've never seen anything like Baltimore.
Well, we got to take a break, and we'll get to the part where, you know, when we laid out the picture that we kind of just laid out, that's the what we call the seedy part of the underbelly of drugs. But there's a completely different side. Mm-hmm. White collar drugs and, you know, housewives and dads and stuff who are going to work and, you know, got hooked on opioids for completely different reasons. We'll get into that coming up on the Morning News Express. We've got to take a break.
930 WFMD traffic for Frederick and surrounding counties.
What we talk about this afternoon, you'll be talking about tomorrow morning. It's Ben Rillin Live from 3 to 6 on Free Talk 930 WFMD.
It's the Morning News Express, 843 at WFMD. Good morning. My name is Bob Miller, the host of the Morning News Express. In the studio with us from the Phoenix Project is Sean Nicholson from Brooks Behavioral Health. He couldn't have just been Brooks. You know, he's got the big name, and also the Catholic counselor and Jonathan Schweitzer in the studio. We're talking about going purple, and it's and again, Jonathan, why are we doing this? Give me the rundown again.
So the bottom line is that the best way to help those that struggle with addiction, right, is for them to know that people care about mm-hmm. them and will stand with them. Right. And then once that's the case, then they've got to make the decision, you know, to get into recovery and to do the hard work. But they can't do it themselves. Right. They're in a place where they're stuck. They got to make the choice to get out. But once they make the choice, they need resources. They need a community that'll stand with them. And so the question is, how do we be that? What can we do to, I call it purple prepared, to be the kind of community where our businesses, our schools, our government, like our neighbors, we know how to stand with those that are struggling with addiction, to do it safely, you know, to do it in a way where we're not, you know, like enabling bad behavior, where we're not getting sucked in ourselves. How do we stand with those that struggle? So that's the idea, you know, that we raise the whole community's ability, capacity, understanding about how we stand together.
Well, obviously that takes money and then resources. And Sean, you were talking about the school that you have and being able to get these kids at a young age. I mean, back in the 80s, you had Nancy Reagan saying, say no to drugs. And everybody kind of chuckled at her and laughed at her. But, you know, are we doing enough in Frederick County Public Schools or schools in general to tell these kids, look, you know what, this is, you know, the reality of it all. Are you allowed to go into schools? David, are you allowed to go into schools and talk to kids and say, this is the reality of drugs, and we all know somebody who's on them, and being able to get these kids. And, geez, I'm sitting there going, well, ninth grade? No, we got to start in elementary school apparently nowadays.
Yeah, I'll be honest, it's extremely hard to – I go into the schools through different side channels to say, like, the health teachers can bring us in under that curriculum to say that this is a piece of health and wellness and this, you know, individual can share lived experience with you guys. So I do get invited to a lot of the schools under that umbrella. But as far as, like, on a larger scale or any kind of real initiative, you know, one thing that I read recently is that a dollar spent on education and prevention and awareness equates to $11 in treatment and incarceration. So, I mean, we're putting all the money on the back end, but again, we need to get in front of it, and this is another way to do so. There's a lot of red tape involved with getting in front of a large body of kids in the school system. It's extremely difficult.
So could I speak to that real quick? Whenever I speak to the school system about assemblies, the sense is that assemblies are a total failure in a school system because all the kids are on their phones the whole time.
Right.
Right. And that it's really not an effective way to handle things. And so they are pretty diligent, from what I can tell, at weaving into their health curriculum instruction about how kids can make good decisions and the dangers and the seduction, you know, of drugs and that sort of thing. And so my sense is that they're open to discussions about how to strengthen that. And so it's just a question of what's the best way, mm-hmm. you know, to handle it. But, you know, for example, for the month, they are weaving instructions into their curriculum. And so So if there's more to do, I say let's identify and talk to them about it, because I think they're open to it.
What was
the problem is that what you can't do is put somebody that has struggled with addiction, just put them in front of kids, because some of those guys have some pretty rough language, and even some of their
sometimes
stories
they need to hear that
are raw.
You know, it's not like they're not saying it in school.
That you got to be careful how much you put in front of them. You're right. There's a balance. The point is, there's a balance there about what you say.
All I got to do is listen to high school football coaches. I mean, you know.
So to answer your question, Bob, do we have the resources to help the kids? And the answer is no.
Okay.
Currently, there is not any residential program for kids in the state of Maryland to inpatient, detox, anything. There was Catoctin Summit was the last standing institution which closed down. So for us to not even have that avenue, whether you have all the money in the world, the best private insurance possible, or state insurance, there's no place safe in the state to send your kid for treatment options. So, I mean, that's a huge gap that we don't have right there.
I was trying to look up, because I know her son was in it, Carissa Flannery, that there was the movie that was done locally.
Yeah.
Were you in that?
I was a producer of it, yeah.
Okay. And what was that called?
Heroin's Grip.
Yeah. Why don't we just show that to the school?
He's a big star.
We have shown that, actually. And you know how we got in was through the kids. We had a couple, like, champion kids that either – I know one particular was Logan Beachley, whose mom was in the video – went to his administrators at his school and said, this is something these kids need to see. And the administrator said, listen, you do a sign-up sheet, and whoever signs up can see it. And we had like 250 kids show up at Brunswick High School.
Good.
And we showed the video to them. And we did that at Middletown and a couple other schools. We didn't have a formal invite or avenue to just broadcast it out. But, I mean, that obviously is a film that depicts and shows the reality of the whole dynamic of how – drugs and alcohol are affecting our community. And that's one thing that, you know, we didn't address is that, you know, there are these issues for white collar, for, you know, lower income population, homeless population, but it's actually affecting, and when you said it in the beginning, you know, everybody's been affected in some capacity, but the toll, emotional toll and trauma that it's having on just like our first responders. I talk to police officers, one individual who's a good friend of mine all the time that has been traumatically impacted by watching all these people die, showing up on all these overdoses calls. And then it trickles down into these families who are like traumatized by these losses, or not even losses. They're traumatized that their son, me, who grew up with every opportunity to succeed as a three-time convicted felon who's been in prison, who, you know, could have went to any college or done anything I ever wanted to, but their families are sitting back. The kids don't have their parents. And this is just, a, you know, just predisposed all the way down that these kids are not becoming, you know, proper raised kids and getting into the drugs and alcohol at such an early age is because they don't have a chance. You know, like they don't know where their mom is, their dad's in prison, whatever the case may be. And now that we have such an influx of usage and issues with substance use, is like it's going to roll downhill. And
well, we, you know, when David, you mentioned, I don't know if it was on the air or just sitting here talking about something about, you know, these people just, they don't love themselves. I mean, do we have a problem of just people just not seeing themselves in a good light anymore, and that they're just, you know, they're just beaten down, downtrodden? And I mean, and what do we do to lift people's souls up?
Well, I tell you what, next month in October, we're doing a men's march, the Jericho Silent Men March. And that's exactly what that march is for. It's going to be a place where we can lift men up. I believe in our culture that a lot of times men get kind of pushed to the background. You see someone win a Heisman Trophy, it's very rarely that they say, Dad, this. They say, Mom did everything for me, because men are just kind of just shoved to the side. Like, just do your job. Make sure that the house is paid for, rent's up, the lights are on. And so as a culture of men, when you start to get beat down and you don't feel yourself being relevant to the story of a child, then a lot of times these men just kind of step back and just do their own thing. And some of them are doing drugs and alcohol, womanizing, doing all kinds of crazy things that separate themselves from their children. But just like Sean was saying, whenever we start looking at really what are the real core problems, fatherlessness sometimes is at the very ground of it. Because if a child doesn't have a father in place, the percentage that that child will be incarcerated or get expelled from school or be obese, or I mean, you can, there's tons of different statistics about what happens when fathers aren't in the picture. So on October 24th, we are definitely going to raise up fathers in our community, and we're going to do it just like the Battle of Jericho. We're going to tear down a wall that seems impenetrable. Yeah. People think that we can't break down this drugs. We can't break down the fact that men aren't in the homes. But I tell you one thing that we haven't talked about, and this is real quick, is that the stigma of drugs and alcohol and recovery is a major issue. If we're going to talk about Frederick Goes Purple, we definitely need to talk about the stigma, because there's a stigma, there's a hatred towards a lot of the things that these people are going through mentally or physically. And so I bring awareness to that because I want people to calm down. But I think the world keeps lifting it up. The news, the media, we already know how this is going. And it's not you, Bob, because I think you're a wonderful person. But the media in general kind of puts a skew on drugs, and it makes it look very, very bad, which it is. But we can do something to fix it. And so that's the stigma. Because I'll be honest, some people don't even walk into my offices because the stigma of coming into an office for help. And that's ridiculous.
Well, that's a pride thing, in my, you know, and the addiction. I think the pride sometimes, and admitting, you know, I mean, I still to this day, people will look, and I'm like, look, you know, when I got born again, God saved me from drinking, and I haven't had a drink since I have had one drink since 1997, and that was the day we buried my dad, and I took a small sip of champagne, but I don't drink, and I've had people say, well, you're no longer fun. You know, I'm like, that's okay. I have different fun. But you look at addiction and you see, like, you know, Sean, like you. I mean, you wear that on your sleeve. You know, David has no problem telling people of his past. And I sit there and I think, and I know, Jonathan, you have to say something, and we got to get at it because we're done. And that is, God puts you through things. So when you come out of those things, that you can help people from entering those things. I mean, what you went through was hell on you, hell on your family, hell on your friends. But now you get to keep people from that hell of other life. Same thing with David. I mean, they, you know, you have that. What you went through is now made you who you are. And because of that, the lives that you will save because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hope that others, you know, when I talk to people at the jail every day, I'm like, you know, I was in there 4.5 years ago sitting on project block, you know, wondering if I'm ever going to have a chance to have a decent regular life and if my parents still love me. You know, that's where I was 4.5 years ago. You know, people change, and my mistakes in my past are today my biggest assets, and my mess has become a message to... You know, it's been very rewarding to help others, you know, affect change in other people because of my mistakes and my failures. You know, God's used that, you know, for their benefit. And so it's very purpose-filled life to be in that position. So.
Jonathan, you got about 30 seconds. I know that's hard for a preacher to do.
We're going purple because of what Sean just said, you know, that we as a Frederick community would make it abundantly clear to anybody that's struggling that we stand with them, recognizing that we've all got struggles that we've gone through. And if there's not a second chance, if people aren't willing to stand with us as we're working through whatever we're working through, it makes it a whole lot harder.
So how do people get involved?
So go to FrederickCountyGoesPurple.com. Go to find out more how to get involved. Shepherd Electric has 1,500 purple light bulbs. You'll see there's several churches around that are lighting their steeples up purple. And then get purple prepared training. Go to the website and get the purple prepared training. We're actually in the process of raising the $5,000 so that we can get that on to video so that we can present that online. If we got everybody to get, you know, all the businesses, all the organizations in Frederick to get prepared training so that they know how to stand with people, that could be a game changer for the community. So it's just been worse through COVID. We didn't get there today, but COVID ended up just creating a lot of hopelessness for those that are in recovery. Yeah. So we need it now more than ever.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Thanks, it's Bob. The Morning News Express, Free Talk 930 WFND.